Welcome to The Brothers Karamazov and Friends, an audiobook disguised as a podcast. Each week we explore the endless pile of pages that comprise the greatest novel of all time, The Brothers Karamazov. We have three rules on TBKAF, and only three. Rule number one, there will be no redos. Rule number two, you will receive no help with pronunciation. And rule number three, you have to do voices for the characters. All of them. We will read each week for exactly 1 hour and pick up the next week where we left off. Thank you for joining us for the fourth and final season of The Brothers Karamazov and Friends. As you may recall, seasons 2 and 3 were both brief, lasting only 2 to 3 episodes each. This season, we hope to surpass those extraordinary goals and reach to new heights of literary stamina. We are joined in this fourth season inauguration by Zachary Owen Kloppenborg, German by name, Irish by blood alcohol level, and Russian in spirit. Welcome to TBKAF, Zachary.
Hello, glad to be here.
Thank you. We are ecstatic that you are here joining us for the fourth season. Who knew that we could make it 4 seasons?
I know.
I feel a little bit like Cheers. In fact, if you were to break every episode, all of the episodes of this show down into 2 to 3 episode seasons, we would have many more than 4 seasons.
We'd rival The Simpsons.
We would have several of them. As you know, Zachary, we will be reading through this book. We'll be switching off at paragraphs. This is a very serious task we're undertaking. I expect you to approach it with a sense of respect and gravity.
Oh, absolutely.
And I expect you to treat this book as you would treat yourself.
I will treat this book better than I treat myself. I will tuck this book in lovingly at night with a kiss on the forehead. And that is the benchmark of my relationship with this book.
You don't do that sort of stuff for yourself?
I don't. It's the kissing on the forehead, really.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
Yeah. That's fair. I usually use the mirror. Quick little.
Oh, that's smart.
Just a little.
That's smart. I like that. I'll try that.
Yeah. Maybe think about it next time you go to bed.
Okay.
At any rate, we're ready to get started. As the guest, you have the distinguished pleasure of reading first, and so I will give you the book. We are on page 462. For those of you who are just joining us, no need to listen to any of the earlier episodes. You'll pretty much know what's going on right from the get-go. All
right. Who has done a world of mean things, but who always was and remained the most noble person, as a person, inside, in his depths. Well, in short, I don't know how to say it. This is precisely what has tormented me all my life. That I thirsted for nobility, that I was, so to speak, a sufferer for nobility, seeking it with a lantern. Diogenes's lantern, and meanwhile all my life I've been doing only dirty things, as we all do, gentlemen. I mean, me alone, gentlemen, not all but me alone. I made a mistake. Me alone. Alone. Gentlemen, my head aches. He winced with pain. You see, gentlemen, I did not like his appearance. It was somehow dishonorable, boastful, trampling on all that's holy, mockery and unbelief, loathsome, loathsome. But now that he's dead, I think differently.
How differently?
Not differently, but I'm sorry I hated him so much.
You feel repentant?
No, not really repentant. Don't write that down. I'm not good myself, gentlemen. That's the thing. I'm not so beautiful myself, and therefore I had no right to consider him repulsive. That's the thing. Perhaps you can write that down.
Having said this, Mitya suddenly became extremely sad. Gradually, for some time now, as he answered the district attorney's questions, he had been growing more and more gloomy. And suddenly, just at that moment, another unexpected scene broke out. It so happened that, though Grushenka had been removed, she had not been taken very far, only to the third room down from the blue room in which the interrogation was now going on. It was a small room with one window, just beyond the big room where they had been dancing and feasting during the night. There she sat, and so far the only one with her was Maximov, who was terribly shocked, terribly frightened, and clung to her as if seeking salvation at her side. Some peasant with a badge on his chest stood at their door. Grushenka was weeping, and then suddenly, when the grief came too near her soul, she jumped up, clasped her hands, and crying, "Woe, woe is me!" in a loud wail, rushed out of the room to him, to her Mitya, so unexpectedly that no one had time to stop her.
"Woe damn."
Mitya, hearing her wail, shuddered all over, jumped up, gave a shout, and as if forgetting himself, rushed headlong to meet her. But again, they were not allowed to come together, though they had already caught sight of each other. He was seized firmly by the arms. He struggled, tried to break loose. It took three or four men to hold him. She, too, was seized, and he saw her shouting and stretching out her arms to him as they drew her away. When the scene was over, he came to himself again in the same place, across the table from the district attorney, and was shouting at them.
What do you want with her? Why do you torment her? She's innocent! Innocent!
The prosecutor and the district attorney were trying to talk sense into him. This took some time, about 10 minutes. At last, Mikhail Makarovich, who had stepped out, came hurriedly into the room, and in a loud, excited voice, said to the prosecutor,
"She has been removed. She is downstairs. But will you permit me, gentlemen, to say just one word to this unfortunate man? In your presence, gentlemen, in your presence."
"As you wish, Mikhail Makarovich,"
the district attorney answered.
"In the present case, we have nothing to say against it."
"Listen, Dmitri Fyodorovich, my dear fellow," Mikhail Makarovich began, turning to Mitya, his whole troubled face expressing warm, almost fatherly compassion for the unfortunate man. "I myself took your Agrafena Alexandrovna, damn it, Alexandrovna, downstairs and handed her over to the innkeeper's daughters, and that old man, Maximov, is there, and never leaves her now. And I talked with her, do you hear? I talked with her, and calmed her down. I impressed upon her that you need to clear yourself, and so she mustn't interfere, mustn't drive you to despair. Otherwise, you may get confused and give wrong evidence against yourself, you see? Well, in short, I talked with her and she saw. She's a smart woman, brother. She's kind. She wanted to kiss these old hands of mine. She asked me to help you. She sent me here herself to tell you that you mustn't worry about her. And it would be a good thing, my dear, it would be a good thing if I went and told her that you're not worried and are comforted about her. So you see, you mustn't worry. I'm guilty before her. She's a Christian soul. Yes, gentlemen, she's a meek soul, and not guilty of anything. Well, what shall I tell her, Dmitri Fyodorovich? Are you going to be quiet or not?"
The kindly man said much more than was necessary, but Grushenka's grief, such human grief, had penetrated his kind soul, and tears even brimmed in his eyes. Mitya jumped up and rushed to him.
"Forgive me, gentlemen! Allow me! Oh, allow me!" he cried out. "You are an angelic soul, Mikhail Makarovich. I thank you for her. I will be quiet. I will be cheerful. Tell her in the infinite kindness of your soul that I am cheerful, cheerful. I'll even start laughing now, knowing that she has such a guardian angel as you. I'll finish with all of this now, and the moment I'm free, I'll go to her at once. She'll see. She must wait. Gentlemen," he suddenly turned to the prosecutor and the district attorney, "I will now open and pour out my whole soul to you. We will finish with this in a moment. Finish it cheerfully. In the end, we'll have a good laugh, won't we? But, gentlemen, this woman is the queen of my soul. Oh, allow me to say it. This is something I'm going to reveal to you. I can see I'm with the noblest men. She is my light, my holy one. And if only you knew. Did you hear her cry, 'I'll go with you, even to execution'? And what have I, a naked beggar, given her? Why such love for me? Am I a clumsy and shameful creature, with a shameful face, worthy of such love, that she should go to hard labor with me? She just laid herself at your feet for me, she, a proud woman, and not guilty of anything. How can I not adore her, not cry out, not long for her, as I do now? Oh, gentlemen, forgive me, but now I am comforted."
And he sank down and, covering his face with both hands, burst into sobs. But they were happy tears. He collected himself at once. The old commissioner was very pleased, and so the jurists seemed to be too. They felt that the interrogation was now entering a new phase. Having sent the commissioner off, Mitya became quite cheerful.
"Well, gentlemen, now I am yours, yours completely. And, if only it weren't for all these small details, we would come to an understanding at once. Again, I'm talking about small details. I'm yours, gentlemen, but I swear, we must have mutual trust. You in me, and I in you. Otherwise, we'll never finish. I'm saying it for your sake. To business, gentlemen, to business. And above all, don't go digging around in my soul so much. Don't torment it with trifles. But keep to the point, to the facts, and I'll satisfy you at once. Devil take the small details.
So Mitya exclaimed. The interrogation began again. Chapter 4. The Second Torment.
You would not believe how encouraged we are, Dmitri Fyodorovich, by this readiness of yours, Nikolai Parfenovich started saying, with an animated look and with visible pleasure shining in his big, protruding, pale, gray, and, by the way, extremely myopic eyes, from which he had just removed his spectacles a moment before. And you have made a very just observation concerning our mutual confidentiality, without which it is sometimes even impossible to proceed in matters of such importance, in the case and sense that the suspected person indeed wishes, hopes, and is able to vindicate himself. For our part, we shall do everything possible, and you have already been able to see how we are conducting this case. Do you approve, Ippolit Kiryakolovich? He suddenly turned to the prosecutor.
Oh, indubitably,
the prosecutor approved, though somewhat dryly compared with Nikolai Parfenovich's outburst.
I will note once and for all that the newly arrived Nikolai Parfenovich, from the very beginning of his career among us, felt a marked respect for our Ippolit Kirillovich, the prosecutor, and became almost heart-to-heart friends with him. He was almost the only man who believed, without reservation, in the remarkable psychological and oratorical talents of our passed-over Ippolit Kirillovich, and also fully believed that he had indeed been passed over. He had heard of him while still in Petersburg, and in turn, the young Nikolai Parfenovich happened to be the only man in the whole world whom our passed-over prosecutor came sincerely to love. On the way there, they had time to set up a few things and make arrangements for the impending case, and now, at the table, the sharp little mind of Nikolai Parfenovich caught on the wing and understood every indication, every movement in the face of his older colleague, from half a word, a look, a wink of the eye.
Wink! Gentlemen, give me leave to tell you my own story, and do not interrupt me with trifles, and I will lay it all out for you in no time. Mitya was seething.
Excellent, sir. Thank you. But before we go on to hear your account, allow me simply to mention one more little fact of great interest for us, namely, the 10 rubles you borrowed yesterday at around 5 o'clock by pawning your pistols to your friend, Pyotr Ilyich Perkutin.
Wink. I pawned them, gentlemen. I pawned them for 10 rubles. That's all. What of it? As soon as I got back to town from my trip, I pawned them at once.
Got back? So you left town?
Wink. I did, gentlemen. I went 30 miles out of town. Didn't you know that?
The prosecutor and Nikolai Parfenovich exchanged glances.
No wink. He's talking right here.
I think it's Nikolai Parfenovich.
Suppose you begin your story with a systematic description of your whole day yesterday, starting from the morning. Let us know, for example, why you left town, and precisely why, when you went and came back. And all these facts.
But you should have asked me that from the very beginning, Mitya laughed loudly. And if you please, I should start not from yesterday, but from the day before yesterday.
Thank goodness.
From that morning.
More exposition.
Then you will understand where, how, and why I went or drove. The day before yesterday, gentlemen, I went to a local merchant, Samsonov, to borrow 3,000 rubles from him on the best security. A sudden itch, gentlemen, a sudden itch.
Allow me to interrupt you,
the prosecutor interjected politely.
Why did you so suddenly need precisely at that moment, that is, 3,000 rubles?
Gentlemen, goddammit. Gentlemen, why pick on such little things? How, when, and why, and precisely this much money, and not that much, and all that claptrap. If you keep on, it'll take you 3 volumes and an epilogue to cram it all in.
A moment of extreme self-awareness.
Very meta.
All this Mitya said with the good-natured but impatient familiarity of a man who wishes to tell the whole truth and is full of the best intentions.
Gentlemen, he caught himself, as it were, don't murmur against me for my bristliness. I ask you again, believe once more that I feel the utmost respect and fully understand the situation. And don't think that I'm drunk. I've sobered up now, and it would be no hindrance if I were drunk, because... Okay, and then there's a song. Do you read that?
Well, that's you.
Okay. Sober and wise, he's stupid. Drunk and stupid, he's wise. That's how I am. Haha! I see, by the way, that it's not proper for me to be cracking jokes with you yet. That is, before we've explained everything. Allow me to keep my dignity. I quite understand the present difference. I'm still sitting before you as a criminal, and therefore unequal to you in the highest degree, and your duty is to watch me. You really can't pat me on the back for Grigory. One certainly can't go breaking old men's heads with impunity. You'll probably try me and lock me up for, what, 6 months or a year in the penitentiary for that. Or, I don't know, whatever the sentence would be. But without loss of rights, it would be... they'll be without loss of rights, won't it, prosecutor? And so, gentlemen, I quite understand this difference. But you must also agree that you could confuse even God himself with such questions. There I stepped, how I stepped, when I stepped, what I stepped in. I'll get confused that way, and you'll pick up every dropped stitch and write it down at once. And what will come of it? Nothing will come of it. And finally, since I've already begun telling my tale, I'll finish it now. And you, gentlemen, being most noble and highly educated, will forgive me. I'll end precisely with a request. You, gentlemen, must unlearn this official method of interrogation. I mean, first you begin, say, with something measly and insignificant. How did you get up? What did you eat? How did you spit? And having lulled the criminal's attention, you suddenly catch him with a stunning question. Whom did you kill? Whom did you rob? Ha ha! That's your official method. That's your rule. That's why all your cleverness, what all your cleverness is based on. You can lull peasants with your cleverness, but not me. I understand the system. I was in the service myself. Ha 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 ha! You're not angry, are you, gentlemen? You'll forgive my boldness, he cried, looking at them with almost surprising good-naturedness. Mitka Karamazov said it, so it's excusable, because what would be inexcusable in an intelligent man is excusable in Mitka. Ha ha!
Nikolai Parfenovich listened and laughed too. The prosecutor, though he did not laugh, was studying Mitya intently, without taking his eyes off him, as if not wishing to miss the least word, the least movement, the least twitch of the least little line on his face.
Incidentally, that is how we began with you from the beginning, Nikolai Parfenovich replied, still laughing, not confusing you with questions about how you got up in the morning and what you ate, but beginning even from what is all too essential.
I understand, I understood, and I appreciated it, and I appreciate still more your kindness to me, which is unprecedented, worthy of the noblest souls. We are three noble men come together here, and let everything with us be on the footing of mutual trust between educated and worldly men, bound by nobility and honor. In any case, allow me to look upon you as my best friends in this moment of my life, in this moment when my honor is humiliated. That's no offense to you, is it, gentlemen?
This interrogation is intense. It's like Law and Order up in here. On the contrary, you've expressed it all quite beautifully, Dmitri Fyodorovich, Nikolai Parfenovich gravely and approvingly agreed.
And away with little details, gentlemen, with all these pettifogging details... is that word? Pettifogging details, Mitya delightedly exclaimed. Otherwise, the devil knows what will come of it. Isn't that so?
Pettifogging? Pull that out of your next cocktail party. I will follow your sensible advice completely. No, no. I will follow your sensible advice completely, the prosecutor suddenly mixed in, addressing Mitya. However, I still do not withdraw my question. It is all too essentially necessary for us to know why precisely you needed such an amount. That is, precisely 3,000.
Why I needed it? Well, for this and that. Well, to repay a debt.
To whom, precisely?
That I positively refuse to tell you, gentlemen. You see, it's not that I cannot tell you, or don't dare, or am afraid, because it's all a paltry matter and perfectly trifling, though. But I won't tell you on principle. It's my private life, and I will not allow you to invade my private life. That is my principle. Your question is irrelevant to the case, and whatever is irrelevant to the case is my private life. I wanted to repay a debt of honor, but to whom, I won't say.
Allow us to write that down, said the prosecutor.
As you wish. Write down this, that I just won't say. Write down, gentlemen, that I would even consider it dishonorable to say. You've got lots of time for writing, haven't you?
Allow me, dear sir, to caution you and remind you once more, in case you are still unaware of it, the prosecutor said, with particular and rather stern impressiveness, that you have every right not to answer the questions that are put to you now, and we, on the contrary, have no right to extort answers from you, if you decline to answer for one reason or another. That is a matter of your personal consideration. On the other hand, in such a situation, it is our business to point out to you and explain the full extent of the harm you will be doing yourself by refusing to give this or that evidence, at which point I ask you to continue.
Gentlemen, I'm not angry, Mitya started mumbling, somewhat taken aback by this reprimand.
You see, gentlemen, this Samsonov to whom I went then.
It's my mumbling voice.
Mumbling? Sorry, where were we?
You're here.
Woohoo! We shall not, of course, reproduce his detailed account of what is already known to the reader. The narrator was impatient to tell everything in the smallest particulars, and at the same time to get through it quickly. But his evidence was being written down as he gave it, and he therefore had necessarily to be stopped. Dmitri Fyodorovich objected, but submitted, was angry, but so far good-naturedly. True, from time to time he cried out, "Gentlemen, this would exasperate the Lord God himself!" Or, "Gentlemen, do you know you're irritating me for nothing?" But despite his exclamations, he still preserved his friendly and expansive mood. Thus he told them how Samsonov had hoodwinked him 2 days before. He now realized fully that he had been hoodwinked then. The sale of the watch for 6 rubles in order to get money for the road, which was still completely unknown to the district attorney and the prosecutor, at once aroused their great interest, and, to Mitya's boundless indignation, they found it necessary to record this fact in the detail, seeing in it a second confirmation of the circumstance that even a day before he had been almost without a kopeck. Little by little, Mitya was becoming gloomy. Then, having described his trip to Lyagavy, the night spent in the fume-poisoned hut, and so on, he brought his story as far as his return to town, where he began on his own, without being specially asked, to describe in detail his jealous torments over Grushenka. He was listened to silently and attentively. They particularly went into the circumstance of his having long ago set up his lookout for Grushenka, going to Fyodor Pavlovich in Maria Kondratyevna's backyard, and of Smirjakov's bringing him information. Why can I say Kondratyevna, but I can't pronounce like half the other names?
That is an interesting question. That is maybe the hardest name in the book.
Weird. And of Smirjakov's bringing him information. This was much noticed and written down. Of his jealousy, he spoke ardently and extensively, and though inwardly ashamed at displaying his most intimate feelings, so to speak, for general disgrace, he obviously tried to overcome his shame for the sake of being truthful. The indifferent sternness of the district attorney's, and especially the prosecutor's, eyes, which they kept fixed on him during his account, disconcerted him, in the end, rather strongly. "This boy, Nikolai Parfenovich, with whom I exchanged some silly remarks about my women only a few days ago, and this sickly prosecutor are not worthy of my telling them this," flashed sadly through his mind. "Oh, shame! Be patient, humble, hold thy peace," he concluded his thoughts, with this line of verse, but still collected himself again in order to go on. Having come to the part about Madame Kokhlikov, he even brightened up again, and was even about to tell a certain recent anecdote, unrelated to the case, concerning the good lady. But the district attorney stopped him, and politely suggested that they pass on to more essential things. Finally, having described his despair and told them of the moment when, as he walked out of Madame Kokhlikov's, he had even had the thought of quickly putting a knife into someone just to get the 3,000. He was stopped again, and it was recorded that he wanted to put a knife into someone. Mitya let them write it down, without protest. Finally, he came to the point in the story when he suddenly found out that Grushenka had deceived him and left Samsonov's just after he brought her there, though she had told him she would stay until midnight. "If I didn't kill this Fenya right then, gentlemen, it was only because I had no time," suddenly escaped him at this place in the story. And this, too, was carefully written down. Mitya waited gloomily and was beginning to tell how he ran to his father's garden, when the district attorney suddenly stopped him and, opening his large briefcase, which lay beside him on the sofa, took out of it a brass pestle.
"Are you familiar with this object?"
He showed it to Mitya.
Yes, Mitya grinned gloomily. "Indeed, I am. Let me see it. Or don't, devil take it."
You forgot to mention it,
the district attorney observed.
Ah, the devil. I wouldn't hide it from you. We certainly couldn't get along without it. Don't you agree? It just escaped my memory.
Be so good, then, as to tell us in detail how you came to arm yourself with it.
I'll be so good if you wish, gentlemen.
And Mitya told how he took the pestle and ran.
But what purpose did you have in mind in arming yourself with such an implement?
What purpose? No purpose. I just grabbed it and ran.
But why, if there was no purpose?
Mitya was seething with vexation. He looked fixedly at the boy and grinned gloomily and maliciously. The thing was that he felt more and more ashamed of having just told such people the story of his jealousy so sincerely and with such effusion.
I spit on the pestle, suddenly escaped him.
Even so, sir.
So I grabbed it to keep off the dogs, or because it was dark, or just in case.
And you have always been in the habit of taking some weapon with you when going out at night, since you are so afraid of the dark?
Ah, the devil! Pah! Gentlemen, it's literally impossible to talk to you, Mitya cried out in the utmost annoyance, and turning to the clerk, all red with anger, with a sort of frenzied note in his voice, quickly said to him,
take this down right now! Right now! That I grabbed the pestle in order to run and kill my father, Fyodor Pavlovich, by hitting him on the head. Well, are you content now, gentlemen? Does that ease your hearts? He said, staring defiantly at the prosecutor and the district attorney.
We realize only too well that you have given such evidence just now because you are annoyed with us and vexed by the questions we put to you, which you regard as petty, and which in essence are quite essential, the prosecutor answered him dryly.
It just occurred to me that...
Are we reading the wrong voice?
I've been mixing up prosecutor and district attorney the whole time and thinking of them as the same person. I've only been doing Nikolai's voice when it says Nikolai. But he's the prosecutor, right?
I think.
All right. From here on out, Nikolai's the prosecutor.
Sure.
But for pity's sake, gentlemen, so I took the pestle. So what does one pick things up for in such cases? I don't know. I snatched it and ran. That's all. Shame on you, gentlemen. Passons. Or I swear I won't say anything more.
He leaned his elbow on the table and propped his head in his hand. He was sitting sideways to them, looking at the wall and trying to overcome the bad feeling inside him. In fact, he really had a terrible urge to stand up and declare that he was not going to say another word, even if you should take me out and hang me.
Aren't we all staring at the wall and trying to overcome the bad feeling inside of us?
Wink.
You see, gentlemen, he suddenly spoke, overcoming himself with difficulty. You see, I'm listening to you and imagining. You see, sometimes I dream a dream in my sleep. One particular dream, and I dream it. It keeps repeating itself that someone is chasing me. Someone I'm terribly afraid of is chasing me in the darkness at night, looking for me, and I'm hiding from him somewhere behind a door or the wardrobe, hiding in a humiliating way, and moreover, he knows perfectly well where I'm hiding. But he seems to pretend not to know where I am on purpose, in order to torment me longer, in order to revel in my fear. That's what you are doing now. It's just the same.
Okay, so the prosecutor is...
This one's Nikolai.
Which is which voice?
That's not the... weird... Yeah.
Okay. Is that the sort of dreams you have? The prosecutor inquired.
Yes, I have such dreams. Why? Do you want to write it down? Mitya grinned crookedly.
No, sir, I do not want to write it down. But still, you do have curious dreams.
This time it's not a dream. Realism, gentlemen. The realism of actual life. I'm the wolf. You're the hunters. So hunt the wolf down.
You shouldn't make such comparisons, Nikolai Parfenovich began very gently.
Why shouldn't I, gentlemen? Why shouldn't I? Mitya boiled up again, though he had apparently unburdened his soul with this outburst of sudden anger, and was growing kinder again with every word.
You may disbelieve a criminal or a prisoner in the dock whom you're tormenting with your questions, but to disbelieve the noblest man, gentlemen, the noblest impulses of the soul, I cry it boldly, no. That you cannot do. You even have no right to. But, heart, Hold thy peace. Be patient. Humble. Hold thy peace.
Well, shall I go on? He broke off gloomily.
Of course, if you'd be so good, replied Nikolai Parfenovich.
It's hard to get kinder with every word.
It's true.
But I feel up to the challenge. Chapter 5, The Third Torment. Though Mitya began speaking sternly, he apparently was trying all the more not to forget or skip over the least detail in his account.
It is a roller coaster ride of inflection with Mitya.
Yeah, he just...
kind to stern to annoyed to good-natured.
He's got a lot of feelings in there.
He does. He's a sensitive soul.
He told how he had jumped over the fence into his father's garden, how he went up to the window, and finally, everything that took place under the window. Clearly, precisely, as though hammering it out, he spoke of the feelings that had troubled him during those moments in the garden, when he had wanted so terribly to know whether Grushenka was with his father or not. But strangely, this time, both the prosecutor and the district attorney somehow listened with terrible reserve, looking at him dryly, asked far fewer questions. Mitya could gather nothing from their faces. They're angry and offended, he thought. Well, devil take them! When he told how he finally made up his mind to give his father the signal that Grushenka had come, so that he would open the window, the prosecutor and the district attorney paid no attention to the word signal, as if they had no idea at all of the word's significance here. Mitya even noticed it. When he finally came to the moment when, seeing his father leaning out of the window, hatred boiled up in him and he snatched the pestle from his pocket, he suddenly stopped as if on purpose. He sat and looked at the wall, knowing they both had their eyes glued to him.
Well, sir, said the district attorney, so you snatched out the weapon, and what then?
Then? Oh, then I killed him, smashed him on the head, and split his skull. That's your version, is it? He suddenly flashed his eyes. All the wrath that had almost died out in him suddenly rose up in his soul with extraordinary force.
Ours, Nikolai Parfenovich replied. Well, and what is yours?
Mitya lowered his eyes and was silent for a long time.
My version, gentlemen, my version is this, he began softly. Whether it was someone's tears, or God heard my mother's prayers, or a bright spirit kissed me at that moment, I don't know. But the devil was overcome. I dashed away from the window and ran to the fence. Father got frightened. He caught sight of me, then for the first time cried out, and jumped back from the window. I remember that very well. And I ran through the garden to the fence. It was here that Grigory caught up with me, when I was already sitting on the fence.
At this point, he finally raised his eyes to his listeners. They seemed to be looking at him with completely untroubled attention. A sort of twinge of indignation went through Mitya's soul.
But I see right now you're laughing at me, gentlemen, he suddenly interrupted.
Why would you draw such a conclusion? Nikolai Parfenovich remarked.
You don't believe a word of it, that's why. I quite understand that I've come to the main point. The old man is now lying there, with his head smashed in, and I, having tragically described how I wanted to kill him, and how I already snatched out the pestle, I suddenly ran away from the window. A poem, in verse. Take the good man's word for it. Ha ha! You are scoffers, gentlemen!
And he swung his whole body around on the chair so hard that the chair creaked.
Creak? And did you notice, the prosecutor began suddenly, as if paying no attention to meet his excitement, did you notice, when you ran away from the window, whether the door to the garden, at the other end of the house, was open or not?
No, it was not open.
It was not?
On the contrary, it was shut. Who could have opened it? Bah, the door. What? Wait, he suddenly seemed to collect himself and all but jumped up. Did you find the door open?
Open.
But who could have opened it, if you didn't open it yourselves? Mitya was suddenly terribly surprised.
The door was open, and your father's murderer undoubtedly went in through that door, and, having committed the murder, went out through the same door. The prosecutor spoke slowly and distinctly, as though hammering out each word. It is perfectly clear to us. The murder obviously took place in the room, and not through the window. Which is positively clear from the investigation carried out, from the position of the body, and everything else. There can be no doubt of that circumstance.
Wink!
Mitya was terribly astounded.
But that's impossible, gentlemen, he cried out, completely at a loss. I didn't go in. I tell you positively with exactness that the door was shut all the while I was in the garden and when I ran out of the garden. I just stood outside the window and saw him in the window. And that's all. That's all. I remember it down to the last moment. And even if I didn't remember, I know it anyway, because the signals were known only to me and Smerdyakov, and to him, the dead man, and without the signals, he wouldn't have opened the door to anyone in the world.
Signals? What kind of signals? The prosecutor said with greedy, almost hysterical curiosity, and instantly lost all his reserved demeanor. He asked as if creeping up timidly. He scented an important fact, still unknown to him, and at once felt great fear that Mitya might not be willing to reveal it fully.
So you didn't even know, Mitya winked.
Wink!
Smiling mockingly and spitefully. And what if I won't tell you? Who will you find out from then? Only the dead man knew about the signals, and me, and Smerdyakov. That's all, and heaven knew too, but it won't tell you. And it's a curious little fact. One could build devil knows what on it. Ha ha! Take comfort, gentlemen. I'll reveal it to you. You've got foolishness in your minds. You don't know with whom you're dealing. You're dealing with a suspect who gives evidence against himself, who gives evidence that does him harm. Yes, sirs, for I am a knight of honor, and you are not.
Dimitri's laugh is sort of like a Disney Frenchman's laugh. The prosecutor swallowed all these pills. Wait. What? I'm assuming these pills are metaphors. And
I think so.
Not that he has been holding a handful of pills this whole time. But maybe. Maybe he had a bunch of pills and he's been waiting until just this moment to swallow all of them.
Muscle relaxers.
He was simply trembling with impatience to know about the new fact. Mitya gave them a precise and extensive account of everything to do with the signals invented by Fyodor Pavlovich for Smerdyakov.
It is muscle relaxers. He's trembling. He's tense.
That's it.
Yep.
Told them precisely what each knock on the window meant, even knocked out the signals on the table, and when asked by Nikolai Parfenovich whether it meant that he, Mitya, when he knocked on the old man's window, had used precisely the signal meaning Grushenka has come, answered exactly that, yes, he had used precisely the signal meaning Grushenka has come.
There you are. Now build your tower, Mitya broke off, and again turned away from them in contempt.
And only your deceased parent, you and the servant Smerdyakov, knew about these signals, and no one else? Nikolai Parfenovich inquired once again.
Yes, the servant Smerdyakov, and heaven too. Write that down about heaven too. It's worth writing down. And you'll have need of God yourselves.
Is that worth writing down? Of course, they began writing it down, but while they were writing, the prosecutor, as if stumbling quite unexpectedly onto a new thought, suddenly said,
But if Smerdyakov also knew about these signals, and you radically deny all accusations of your father's death, then was it not he who, having given the agreed signal, got your father to unlock the door for him and then committed the crime?
Mitya gave him a deeply mocking and at the same time terribly hateful look. He stared at him long and silently until the prosecutor began blinking his eyes.
Caught the fox again, Mitya spoke finally. Pinched the rascal by the tail. Heh. Oh, it's a different one. It's a different ha. It's heh. I see right through you, prosecutor. You thought I'd jump up at once, snatch your prompting, and shout at the top of my lungs, Aye, it's Smerdyakov. He's the murderer. Admit that's why what you thought. Admit it, and then I'll go on.
Dimitri is very intent on proving his honor and proving that he's the murderer.
He is.
But the prosecutor admitted nothing. He was silent and waited.
You are mistaken. I will not shout against Smerdyakov, said Mitya.
And you do not even suspect him at all?
Do you suspect him?
He is one of our suspects.
Mitya planted his eyes on the floor.
Joking aside, he said gloomily, Listen. From the very beginning, almost from the moment when I ran out to you from behind the curtains tonight, this thought already flashed through me. Smerdyakov! All the while I was sitting here at the table, shouting that I was not guilty of blood, I kept thinking, Smerdyakov! And Smerdyakov would not let go of my soul. Finally, just now, I suddenly had the same thought. Smerdyakov! But only for a second. Immediately, right next to it, came the thought, no, not Smerdyakov! It's not his doing, gentlemen.
In that case, do you suspect yet another person? Nikolai Parfenovich asked guardedly.
I don't know who or what person, the hand of heaven or Satan, but not Smerdyakov, Mitya snapped out resolutely.
But why do you maintain so firmly and with such insistence that he is not the one?
From conviction, from impression. Because Smerdyakov is a man of the most abject nature and a coward. Poor Smerdyakov. Everybody hates him. Not just a coward, but a conjunction of all cowardice in the world taken together, walking on two legs. He was born of a chicken. Every time he talked with me, he trembled for fear I might kill him. Though I never even raised my hand. He fell at my feet and wept. He kissed these very boots of mine, literally, begging me not to scare him. Scare, do you hear? What sort of word is that? And I even gave him presents. He's a sickly, epileptic, feeble-minded chicken who could be thrashed by an 8-year-old boy. What sort of a character is that? No, not Smerdyakov, gentlemen. And he doesn't care about money either. He never would take my presents. Anyway, why would he kill the old man? You see, he may be his son, his natural son. Do you know that? This a vicious attack on Smerdyakov.
Especially to prove he's innocent.
To prove he's innocent. He also, I love how he was giving him presents. No. Smerdyakov would never take his presents.
No.
He would never take my presents.
And so he's born of a chicken.
Yeah, also he was born of a chicken.
That pettifogging Smerdyakov. We have heard that legend, but after all, you too are your father's son, and yet you told everyone you wanted to kill him.
He rocked through my own window, and a low one, a nasty one. I'm not afraid. Oh, gentlemen, how mean of you to say that to my face. Mean because I myself said it to you. I not only wanted to kill him, but I could well have killed him, and I voluntarily heaped it upon myself that I almost killed him. But I didn't kill him. My guardian angel saved me. That's what you haven't taken into consideration. And that is what makes it mean. Mean! Because I didn't kill him. I didn't! Do you hear, prosecutor? I didn't!
He almost choked. Not once during the whole investigation had he been so agitated.
And what has he told you, gentlemen? Smerdyakov, I mean, he suddenly concluded after a silence. May I ask you that?
You may ask us anything, the prosecutor replied, with a cold and stern look. Anything concerning the factual side of the case. And it is our duty, I repeat, to satisfy your every question. We found the servant Smerdyakov, about whom you inquire, lying unconscious in his bed, with a very severe attack of the falling sickness, which had recurred perhaps 10 times in succession. The doctor who was with us examined the sick man and told us he might not even live till morning.
Well, in that case, the devil killed my father, suddenly escaped from Mitya, as if even up to that moment he had been asking himself, Smerdyakov, or not Smerdyakov.
We shall return to this fact again, Nikolai Parfenovich resolved. And now, wouldn't you like to go on with your evidence?
Mitya asked for a rest. It was politely granted. Having rested, he began to go on. It's an important 4 sentences right there. But it was obviously difficult for him. He was worn out, insulted, and morally shaken. Besides, the prosecutor, now quite intentionally, began irritating him every moment by pestering him with details. As soon as Mitya described how, sitting astride the fence, he had hit Grigory, who was clutching his left leg, on the head with a pestle, and then jumped down at once to the stricken man, the prosecutor stopped him and asked him to describe in greater detail how he was sitting on the fence. Mickey was surprised.
You know, if this were like an actual murder mystery, like an Agatha Christie, that 4 sentences of arrest they took would be very important later on. I know it.
There's a good chance that they're going to bring it back. Somewhere on page 900 and a billion.
By the way, remember that 4 minutes of arrest they took in the middle of Mitya's interrogation?
That was very important. That was very important. The last sentence of the book.
Well, like this, astride it, One leg here, the other there.
Who is it who's bugging him?
The prosecutor.
Oh. And the pestle?
The pestle was in my hand.
Not in your pocket? You remember such a detail? So then you must have swung hard.
I must have swung hard, but what do you need that for?
Why don't you sit on the chair exactly as you were sitting on the fence then, and act out for us visually, for the sake of clarification, how and where you swung, in what direction?
You're not mocking me, are you? Mitya asked, glancing haughtily at his interrogator. But the latter did not even bat an eye. Mitya turned convulsively, sat astride the chair, and swung his arm.
That's how I hit him! That's how I hit him! Anything else?
Thank you. Now, may I trouble you to explain why, in fact, you jumped down, with what purpose, and what, in fact, you had in mind?
Ah, the devil. I jumped down to the stricken man. I don't know why.
Even though you were so agitated and running away?
Yes, agitated and running away.
Did you want to help him?
Help him? Ha! Well, maybe also to help him. I forget.
You forgot yourself? That is, you were even somehow unconscious?
Oh, no, not unconscious at all. I remember everything, to the last shred. I jumped down to look at him and wiped the blood off with my handkerchief.
We have seen your handkerchief. Did you hope to bring the man you struck back to life?
I don't know if I hoped anything. I simply wanted to make sure he was alive or not.
Ah, you wanted to make sure? Well, and so?
I'm not a doctor. I couldn't tell. I ran away thinking I'd killed him, but he recovered. Do you need to be a doctor to know if somebody is alive?
Apparently. Wonderful, sir, the prosecutor concluded. Thank you. That is just what I wanted. Be so good as to continue.
Alas, it did not even occur to Mitya to tell them, though he remembered it, that he had jumped down out of pity, and that standing over the murdered man, he had even uttered a few pathetic words. You came a cropper, old man. There's no help for it. Now lie there. But the prosecutor drew just one conclusion, that the man would only have jumped down at such a moment and in such agitation, with the purpose of making completely sure whether the sole witness to his crime was alive or not. And what strength, consequently, what resolution, cold-bloodedness, and calculation the man possessed even at such a moment, and so on and so forth. The prosecutor was pleased. I irritated the morbid fellow with details, and he gave himself away.
Painfully, Mitya went on, but again he was stopped at once, this time by Nikolai Parfenovich. Wait, what? Oh, goddammit.
Maybe Nikolai Parfenovich was the
district attorney? I don't think so. Oh, who cares?
We're going to stay the course.
Okay.
How could you have run to the servant Fedosya Markov with your hands and, as it turned out later, your face so covered with blood?
But I didn't notice at the time that there was any blood on me, Mitya answered.
That's plausible. It does happen that way, the prosecutor... The prosecutor exchanged looks with Nikolai Parfenovich.
God damn it.
Okay. We're going to switch it up. Nikolai Parfenovich is the goofy voice.
Okay.
Prosecutor is the bad Russian voice.
Throat cancer voice. I precisely didn't notice. Beautiful, prosecutor. What? Mitya, too, suddenly approved. But next came the story of Mitya's sudden decision to remove himself and make way for the happy ones. And now it was quite impossible for him to bring himself to lay bare his heart, as before, and tell them about the queen of his soul. It sickened him in the face of these cold people, who bit at him like bedbugs. Therefore, to their repeated questions, he declared briefly and sharply,
"So I decided to kill myself. Why should I go on living? Naturally, that jumped into the picture. Her offender arrived, the former indisputable one, and he came riding to her with love after 5 years to end the offense with legal marriage. So I realized that it was all over for me, and behind me was disgrace and that blood, Grigory's blood. Why live? So I went to redeem the pond pistols, to load them, and to put a bullet into my sconce at dawn."
"And feast the night before?"
"And feast the night before. Eh, the devil, let's get it over with quicker, gentlemen. I was certainly going to shoot myself, not far from here, just outside town. And I would have disposed of myself at about 5 o'clock in the morning. I had a note all prepared in my pocket. I wrote it at Perkerton's when I loaded the pistol. Here it is. Read it. I'm not telling it for you." He suddenly added contemptuously. He threw the piece of paper from his waistcoat pocket onto the table in front of them. The investigators read it with curiosity and, as is customary, filed it away.
"And you still did not think of washing your hands even as you entered Mr. Perkerton's?
In other words, you were not afraid of arousing suspicion?
What suspicion? Suspicion or not, all the same, I'd have driven here and shot myself at 5 o'clock. And there would have been no time to do anything about it. If it weren't for what happened to my father, you wouldn't have found anything out and come here. Oh, the devil did it. The devil killed my father, and the devil let you find out so soon. How on earth did you get here so soon? It's a wonder. Fantastic.
Mr. Perkerton told us that when you came to him, you were holding your money, a lot of money, a wad of 100 ruble bills, in your hands, your blood-stained hands, and that the servant boy also saw it.
Yes, gentlemen, that's true. I remember.
Okay, this is the other voice. This Nikolai is the... Okay. No wonder...
No, Nikolai is the voice that we're just still doing the wrong voice.
Oh my god! I'm so confused.
So the prosecutor is the goofy voice.
Okay.
And Nikolai is the district attorney, and Nikolai is the Nikolai voice.
Oh, good. Okay.
Now, one little question arises. Would you mind informing us, Nikolai Parfenovich began with extreme gentleness, as to where you suddenly
Gentler.
Got... Gentleness. As to where you suddenly got so much money, when it appears from the evidence, even from the simple reckoning of time, that you did not stop at your own lodgings.
The prosecutor winced slightly at the bluntness with which the question had been put, but he did not interrupt Nikolai Parfenovich.
So are there three interrogators in the room?
There's two.
There's two.
Nikolai Parfenovich must be the district attorney.
That's what, yes. That's what I thought. Okay. So he's Goofy Voice.
No.
District attorney is...
district attorney is Nikolai, and he's the voice you just did.
Okay. And so the prosecutor
is
Goofy
voice.
Okay.
Yeah.
His own lodgings.
No, I didn't stop at my lodgings, Mitya replied, apparently very calmly, but dropping his eyes.
Allow me in that case... No, wait. Nikolai Parfenovich is Goofy voice.
No, Nikolai Parfenovich is...
Allow me in that case to repeat the question, Nikolai Parfenovich continued, somehow creeping up. Where could you have gotten such a sum all at once? Then, by your own admission, at 5 o'clock that same afternoon, you...
Needed 10 rubles and pawned my pistols to Perkerton, then went to Koplikov for 3,000, which she didn't give me, and so on, and all the rest of it, Mitya interrupted sharply. So yes, gentlemen, I needed the money, and then suddenly thousands appeared, eh? You know, gentlemen, you're both afraid now. What if he won't tell us where he got it? And so it is. I won't tell you, gentlemen. You've guessed right. You'll never know. Mitya suddenly hammered out with great determination. The investigators fell silent for a moment.
Understand, Mr. Karamazov, that it is an essential necessity that we know this, Nikolai Parfenovich said softly and humbly.
I understand, but I still won't tell you.
The prosecutor intervened and again reminded him that a man under interrogation was, of course, at liberty not to answer questions if he thought it more beneficial, and so on. But in view of the harm the suspect might do himself by keeping silent, and especially in view of questions of such importance as...
And so on, gentlemen, and so on. Enough, I've heard the whole harangue before, Mitya again interrupted. I myself understand the importance of the matter and what the most essential point is, and I still won't tell you.
What is it to us, sir? It's not our business, but yours. You will only be harming yourself, Nikolai Parfenovich remarked nervously.
You see, gentlemen, joking aside, Mitya raised his eyes and looked at them both steadily, and I would imagine winked. From the very beginning, I had a feeling we would be at loggerheads on this point. But when I first started giving evidence today, that was all in a fog of things to come. It was all floating out there, and I was even so naive as to make a suggestion of mutual trust between us. Now I see for myself that there could be no such trust, because we were bound to come to this cursed fence. Well, so we've come to it. It's impossible, that's all. I don't blame you, by the way. It's also impossible for you to take my word for it. I quite understand that.
I thought they already talked about the fence.
This fence is a metaphor.
Oh. So many fences.
A lot of fences. The brothers Karamazov and fences.
He fell gloomily silent.
This might be a great point to take a quick break and tell everyone that Zach is also the director of the Colonel Mustard's backyard spectacle this summer, The Brothers Karamazov Unabridged.
Yeah. And you would think, by knowing that I would also have, like, read the book by now. I have not.
In keeping with Mustard tradition, we have exhaustively researched this book.
I looked at the Wikipedia article. And I did read the first few chapters to, like, meet the characters.
Oh, you pretty much get the whole thing from there.
It's I reading it, I kind of wanted to condense it and make it like the Brady Bunch intro.
So do you know who killed Fyodor?
I do.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, because it's at the end of the play.
Find out, listeners, if you would like to know who killed Fyodor, which we will probably get to the play before we get to that point in the book. You have the opportunity, the singular opportunity, to come. What are the dates for this show?
August, I want to say 21st and 22nd, and we're thinking about putting in a third performance on a Thursday. Maybe.
Bring yourselves on out to 920 D Street and see the magic at work. And
spoiler,
find out...
Spoiler alerts.
True.
Will spoil this podcast if you see the show.
So if you see the show, maybe don't listen to the podcast anymore. And if you really care about the podcast, maybe don't see the show.
Right. They're mutually exclusive.
This book is
it's one or the other. You choose.
This book is a bit like Harry Potter or an Agatha Christie novel. You like you don't want someone to ruin the plot for you because that's the most important part. I don't remember where we are.
So Snape kills Fyodor?
Yeah, so at the end it turns out the Snape did it, but it's okay because
right.
he did it out of kindness toward Alyosha, whom he had been watching his whole life grow up.
Yes.
It's a real blending of things.
See, the monk and the whole like monastery thing that Alyosha goes through is actually a mistranslation. It was Wizarding College. It's Hogwarts. It's J.K. Rowling is a literary genius and she just picked up where Dostoevsky left off.
Is there a Wizarding College? Did they mention that in Harry Potter?
Ooh, that's right. Clearly.
Or do you just graduate high school and that's the extent of your education?
I'll leave you with that, because I don't know.
Which would explain why wizards never really seem very cultured.
It's true.
They never seem like they've gotten an experience where they can, like, kind of find themselves.
No, it's true. There is no, like, higher education in the wizarding world. And I don't think you could take, like... your grades from Hogwarts and take them to like Cambridge or Oxford or anything. You can't even get like normal education.
Maybe you have to though go to some sort of normal education because at Hogwarts you don't learn anything.
That is true.
Except for wizarding things. So apparently when you come out of Hogwarts you can't read.
I can turn myself into a cat, but I can't multiply 4 times 3.
It's a problem.
It's
a problem. But who needs to multiply when you can
That's true.
Cast spells.
Mm-hmm.
There are no actuaries in the wizarding world.
No.
I don't
Not
remember
good ones,
where we
anyway.
there's actuaries, but they're awful.
We had left off at he fell gloomily silent. I think it was Mitya who fell gloomily silent.
Yeah. Okay. But could you not, without in the least violating your determination to keep silent on this main point...
Did you stop the timer?
No, it's still going.
Okay.
Could you not at the... Has it been that terrible?
Yes.
That's fair. Could you not at the same time give us at least some slight hint as to precisely what sort of compelling motives might force you to keep silent at a moment so dangerous for you in your evidence?
Mitya smiled sadly and somehow pensively. The emotions on this guy.
I am much kinder than you think, gentlemen. And I will tell you my reasons and give you that hint, though you are not worthy of it. I keep silent, gentlemen, because it involves a disgrace for me. The answer to the question of where I got this money contains such a disgrace for me as could not be compared even with killing and robbing my father, if I had killed and robbed him. That is why I cannot speak. Because of the disgrace. What, gentlemen, are you going to write that down? What is the thing that you think was so disgraceful that Dimitri did to get this money that he can't say it? That might be an excellent thing for people to tweet in this week.
Yes.
I believe that since we left off from the show, though it was many moons ago, that Twitter still exists. if so, I could be wrong. If so...
Legends tell of a social networking site.
Go ahead and tweet in your ideas about what disgraceful thing Dimitri might have done to get that money that is so disgraceful he can't even speak of it. I've got some ideas, but I can't say them on a podcast.
And do we have a prize for the best answer?
Oh, absolutely. Whoever supplies the best answer will be allowed to have this entire series shipped to them on Laserdisc to play into their own Laserdisc players at home. Or the media of your choice, but I would assume probably Laserdisc.
See, if it were
tweet
me,
in.
My media of choice would be to just have the entire cast of the Brothers Karamazov and Friends live in my home, like on my media shelf, that I could pull it off and have the entire thing read to me at
any
time.
And we'll look into that.
Particularly Carrie Todd.
We're not entirely sure the logistics of getting everyone to live in your house on your media shelf, but we'll definitely look into it. So there's that.
Yes, we shall write it down, Nikolai Parfenovich muttered.
You shouldn't be writing it down, about the disgrace, I mean. I only gave you that evidence out of the goodness of my soul, but I didn't have to do it. I gave it to you as a gift, so to speak. But you pick up every stitch. Well, write. Write whatever you want, he concluded, contemptuously and with distaste. I'm not afraid of you, and I'm proud before you.
And would you tell us what sort of disgrace it might be? Muttered Nikolai Parfenovich.
You know, you notice how many silent W's we use in English when you're trying to do a Russian accent?
Yeah. There's a whole lot of them.
There are.
There's a lot. The prosecutor winced terribly. Maybe it's winked and they just misspelled it.
I think so.
The prosecutor winked terribly.
Wink.
No, c'est fini. Don't bother. There's no need dirtying myself. I've already dirtied myself enough on you.
Come on, excuse me.
You're not worthy. You are anyone else.
Enough, gentlemen, drop it. That, I think, is the disgraceful thing.
Yeah, I mean, this reminds me a little bit of week 3 with Jake Kester. If our gentle listeners would go back and listen, they may remember that there was an entire exposition about penises. And this feels a little bit like that. This was said all too resolutely. Agreed. Nikolai Parfenovich stopped insisting, but he saw at once from the glance of Ippolit Kirillovich that he had not yet lost hope.
Could you not at least state how much money was in your hands when you came with it to Mr. Perkutin's? That is, exactly how many rubles?
I cannot state that either.
I believe you made some statement to Mr. Perkutin about 3,000 that you supposedly got from Madame Koklikov.
Maybe I did. Enough, gentlemen. I won't tell you how much.
In that case, will you kindly describe how you came here and all that you did when you came?
Oh, good.
Again?
More. Oh, ask the local people about it. Or no, maybe I will tell you.
Maybe. He told them, but we shall not give his story
Thank
here.
Goodness. Thank goodness. You already did.
It was dry, brief. He did not speak at all about the raptures of his love. He did tell, however, how the resolve to shoot himself abandoned him in the face of new facts. He told it without giving motives, without going into details. And this time...
Oh, no! Thank you for joining us on the Brothers Karamazov and Friends. Please join us next time for the id, the ego, the superego, and the super terrible.